WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Ben Cheever was used to being a customer, not a salesman, but for 5 years he worked in various chain stores, selling sandwiches, computers, cars, and books. Cheever is better known for writing books than selling them. He's the author of 3 books of fiction and the editor of a collection of letters by his father, the late writer John Cheever. Ben is married to New York Times book critic and former film critic Janet Maslin. Before writing books, Ben Cheever worked as an editor at Reader's Digest. In 1995, he was having trouble getting his third novel published. He decided to write another book on a problem a growing number of Americans were dealing with, trying to get and keep a job in the service economy. Although most of the jobs he landed were in sales, he worked briefly as a security guard. I asked him about the training he was given.
Well, we were told to do almost nothing. I mean, a lot of our training was not to do anything. We were told not to arrest anyone. We were told because if you make an arrest and the person is not convicted of the crime you're arresting them for, then you can be sued for false arrest. We were told not to think for ourselves. We were told to wear our uniforms and be neat and write everything down we saw, but not to interfere. And we were also told not to steal anything, and that we'd be watched very carefully, and to make sure that no other employees stole anything, because that was a big concern of the employers, I think.
Was it a dangerous job? Did you ever feel at risk?
Well, in fact, I ended up guarding a perfume plant for 2 nights. I was the only person there. When I first arrived there, I said to the people who were showing me around, I said, perfume, who's going to steal perfume? And they said, well, we have another plant in Canada that was held up by a bunch of guys with ski masks carrying shotguns. And then they went home and left me in the car. And they told me no one was going to come. They said, nobody else is going to come on the campus except the vice president might show up, they said. And I said, well, how will I know he's the vice president? And they said, you'll know, he looks like the vice president. But otherwise, no one's supposed to show up. And just before I went off duty, which was at 6 a.m. the next morning, a truck showed up. And I was terrified. I thought, I had no gun. I didn't have a stick. I didn't have anything. And I was wearing this blue uniform that said security all over it. And I was frightened.
What happened?
Well, I called 911, which is what I was told to do, and a police car came over, and they came quickly, and they were very respectful and nice to me, and they went over and questioned this guy in the truck. And then they drove. Then they came back and they said he has authority, and I didn't know what that meant. And then they left, and I drove over, and there was this guy, and he was up on the top of a big truck. And I looked up at him, and I said, "I'm the guy who called the police." And he said, "What were you doing? There's no one ever, never anyone here." And I said, "Well, I'm guarding the place." And he said, "You thought some knucklehead was trying to steal your garbage?" And then I realized that it was a truck picking up a dumpster. It had a dumpster on the back of it. But I was terrified.
You must have felt like you were taking a big risk, or at least you were exposing yourself to the possibility of a big risk for pretty low pay. How much did you get paid per hour?
Well, I think it was I was driving my own car and paying for my own gas, and I think if you factor that out, I was probably making close to minimum wage, maybe a little bit less than minimum wage. And the place had been, the reason they'd hired the security company is because the place had been cased out by a couple of, convicted felons. So, who'd come in with a special thing to open the gate. So there was reason to be concerned. Yes, I might have been killed for almost no money. And during the course, during the preparation, the one-day preparation, the instructor had said, he said, you watch movies and we don't come off very well. He said, we're always getting tied up. We're always getting dead. I mean, he was talking about the image, but it planted in my mind a genuine fear.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ben Cheever. His new book is called Selling Ben Cheever, Back to Square One in a Service Economy. And it's about a series of low-paying jobs that he took on. Now, one of the positions that you took on was selling cars at an auto mall. And I think customers are probably more suspicious of car salesmen than any other kind of salesman, probably because the price of a car is so expensive and there's so much play in that price. You have to negotiate, and that probably the better the salesman is, the more trouble you might be in. in terms of the price. What are some of the rules that you learned when you were selling cars about how to play a customer?
Well, you were told never, ever to mention the price. We were memorized four bypasses, which were things you said when they asked you, but how much is that car gonna cost me? You'd say, well, I'm not sure that's exactly the car you want. Every car is a different price. But I'm sure we'll get you just the right price. But first, let's find exactly the car you want. You wanted to get them in love with a car before you even talked about price for two reasons. One is that moved them toward a sale. And the other was that if you give them the price, they can stalk out and go to another dealership and use that to lower a price somewhere else. So that was a lie you were instructed to tell, that you didn't know the price of the car when, in fact, you had some idea what the price was.
And I know, like, when you're buying a car, once you do get to talking about price, the salesman always says, when you say that you want a lower price than the one you're being offered, the salesman always says, let me check with the manager. And he goes to the back office, or she goes to the back office, comes back a few minutes later, and gives you a new price. When you did that, did you really meet with the manager, or did you just spend a couple of minutes in an empty room pretending like you were talking with the manager?
No, I met with the manager, but we had a couple of things we did. One is the manager had a lease and loan computer, and he would be working out the monthly payments. Most of the people I sold cars to were taking out a loan or leasing it. So it was a month, we were working on a monthly payment. So that had to be recalculated. But what you did when you got close is then you came, since I was new, and actually they did this with people who'd been there for a while, you came out with the manager together to the cubicle where the customers were. The manager sat in your chair behind the desk, and you sat with the customer. You double team them like this. So it's almost like a football play. It was also done in the electronics stores. You get a couple of people on your side, and that adds the weight of more people, and they're more inclined to buy a car.
And that way the person who's selling to you appears to actually be on your team and appears to
be
helping you, but they're actually selling you.
That's right.
So how good were you at selling things because you were going to make a larger profit on it?
Well, that's the game. I had a thing, and I mentioned this in the book. I'd sold an old man a car at a tremendous markup. An old man I liked a car at a tremendous markup, which was the equivalent of hitting a home run with three people on base. And I was very pleased with myself. And I went to a party, at which there were people of my class, and I told this story expecting to be congratulated, and everyone was horrified because they sympathized with the old man. Well, but if you're a car salesman and you don't push the price up, you're not only going to make any money, but you're not playing the game. That's the game. It's like playing baseball and saying, I don't want to hit the ball with this bat because it's going to hurt the ball. That's the game.
How many jobs did you hold over the period that you were writing this book?
Well, it depends on how you count. Somewhere between 12 and 15, 16, I guess.
What's the longest you lasted in any one job?
The longest was car sales, and that was the job I liked best, too. And they were sorry to see me go. I love it when they're sorry to see me go. I said to my manager, I said, well, you spent a lot of time training me. And he said, and I said, and I'm sorry to let you down. And he said, no. He said, I think you could sell cars, he said.
What did you like selling cars the best of everything that you tried?
Well, we had a lot of, there was a lot of good feeling. There was a lot of joking and back, patting among the other salesmen. I used to get up to leave at night, and the man in the cubicle next to me used to say, you say the dead won't rise again, but you haven't seen Ben Cheever at quitting time, because I used to rush out with such alacrity. And there was a lot of good feeling there, and you had a lot of freedom. If somebody was really a stinker to you in a car store, you could turn on and walk away. If somebody's really a stinker to you in an electronics store, you have to put up with it. And sometimes someone will come in and take a whole morning and spend that whole morning torturing you and buy nothing. There are chain store sadists.
What are you doing now with your days?
Well, I'm writing a novel and But I do miss this, and I want to find, I need a place to be engaged, more engaged in the world than I am as a full-time writer. These people that I worked with that were my friends for that brief period of time, sometimes 3 months, sometimes 2 days, it just made me feel better about everything because they were in situations much more difficult than my own. And not only were they staying at work and doing these jobs for which they were disdained in many cases, but they were also funny and helpful and humorous. And they were always helping me out. You know, at the computer store, I'd have trouble writing up my ticket because my handwriting's so bad. And the woman at the register would not only fix it, but she'd say, "Oh, it'll be all right, honey." You know, they were nice. And you're around those people for 8 to 12 hours in a day sometimes. And you go home and you feel so good about people. You really think, hey, you know, we're not such a bad group.
Well, Ben Cheever, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks very, very much for having me.
Ben Cheever's new book is called Selling Ben Cheever. This is Fresh Air.